göra.
Into podcast.
A stick, a stone, it's the end of the road. It's the rest of a stump, it's a little alone. It's a sliver of glass, it is life, it's the sun. It is night, it is death, it's a trap, it's a gun. The oak when it blooms, a fox in the brush, a knot in the wood, the song of a thrush, the wood of the wind, a cliff, a fall, a scratch, a lump. It is nothing at all. It's the wind blowing free. It's the end of the slope. It's a beam. It's a void. It's a hunch. It's a hope. And the riverbank talks of the waters of Mars. It's the end of the strain. It's the joy in your heart. Hello. And, yeah, it's,
How dare you come before me and sing the non-original lyrics to one of the greatest Brazilian songs of all time.
Do you want me to butcher the pronunciation?
No, I'll do it. I'll do the chorus. É passo, é ponte, é sapo, é rã, é resto de mato na luz da manhã. São as águas de Marte fechando o verão e a promessa de vida no teu coração. Pau.
I love the original so much. I love the Art Garfunkel as well, but the original I really love. The Waters of Mars. Hello.
Yeah.
November 15th, 2009.
Wait, sorry. Oh. Before we talk about Waters of Mars, I just saw a list that said that Waters of Mars is the second best Brazilian song of all time. Mm. I desperately need to know what the top one is. So you're just going to have to bear with me for 1 second. Because it might be a song you know, so...
Let's make you the drum roll.
Come on. You know things are bad when Wikipedia sends you to a archive.org copy of a page. Oh, it's Construção by Chico Buarque. You don't know which one that is. I'm sorry.
Oh.
He's a great guy, but he's not, he doesn't have a lot of, as much crossover appeal as Waters of March has. Anyway, go.
November 15, 2009, written by Phil Ford, Brum Brum, Hong Kong, because we're in the Phil Ford, and Russell T Davies as well, and written by Graham Harper. This is Graham Harper's last ever involvement. Maybe I don't know if he comes back for Sarah Jane, he might. In terms of the main show, this is his farewell. What a farewell it is. Ooh, okay, the gist. So the Doctor arrives on Mars, okay, and there's a colony in motion.
But they and there's life on Mars.
There is sailors. He quickly realizes that it's the first human colony on the planet, led by Adelaide Brooke. AKA TC-14, and he recognizes her and the other settlers because they very famously die in mysterious circumstances on the exact day that he's chosen to visit them. At the same time, one of the settlers, who, side note, I only realized that he is like, I was watching Doctor Who Confidential, the episode about World War III, and one of the Slitheen had taken their helmet off, and he was like, this is how you like activate like the claws on the costume. And that's where I learned that the guy who plays Andy Stone is like a monster performer for like a load of episodes. He also played Kit Fisto in Phantom Menace, which, you know, with TC-14 in this as well as, you know, big crossover. Anyway, he eats a carrot that's been, it's covered in like water and it possesses him and makes him like a weird kind of zombie. And he's like, covered in water, and he also possesses, is Is her character, is she like a Keynes in Dunk 2021? Is that her character's name? I've only seen that movie once.
Who?
The Maggie, she's in Dune. She plays, is she? She's the what's her name? Is it Kind? I think it's Kynes, I don't know.
Oh, she is.
Yeah.
She plays Dr. I will not read this name. I'm so sorry. Also plays a gender-bent version of Professor Moriarty in Enola Holmes 2. Fell asleep halfway through that sentence.
Leah Kynes, yeah. And the other person it possesses is, of course, Mark Grantham.
They come for the randoms.
They come for the water. The doctor resists. Doctor's like continuing to be like, I gotta leave. Because he realizes that it's a fixed point in time, which something that Dalek also realized in 2008 when it saw a young Adelaide Brooke and was like, I can't kill you, I'm sorry. But he still stays anyway. And they learn that a microscopic organism called the Flood bypassed a broken filter in the system and infected their water supply. And now it plans to use the settlers to invade Earth and infect the waters of Earth. The doctor decides to leave, but not before Adelaide like forces him to tell her why he's so jumpy, and he's like, you all die, and inspires like your descendants to go out there and like establish new kingdoms and stuff. However, as everything falls into like disarray and more people get taken, he heads back. And he's like, I'm the last one. I'm ungovernable. You cannot take me down. And he actually saves Adelaide and two of the other crew members, including Gemma Chan. Gemma Chan, who freaks out in the TARDIS and almost has a breakdown, which he should have because it must have been crazy. But he basically...
She saw her future.
He puts the future in
jeopardy.
Not internals. He puts the future in jeopardy doing this while the base explodes and kills the Flood. And he calls himself the Time Lord Victorious. He's like, I'm the Time Lord Victorious. No one can tell me what the laws of time are anymore because I control them. And also, I will make a t-shirt that has glow-in-the-dark lore written on it. You can't stop me. Adelaide's like horrified and she like kills herself to fix the future. And the doctor's like, oh, fuck. And he like collapses and he sees like a vision of Ood Sigma. And he's like, am I meant to die now? And then
he goes, Sigma goes, bye later, see you later, bitch.
And he goes in the TARDIS, he's like, no, I'm not going to die now. And he runs away.
Before we do anything, I just want to share that the Wikipedia page for Waters on Mars has back behind the scenes footage, clearly filmed from a handheld phone from 2009. It is a 34-second footage of a guy spraying snow in front of the TARDIS. You do not see any actors. You do not see any actual filming. It is 34 seconds uninterrupted of the guy spraying snow in front of the TARDIS. And the thing is, the footage contains such like beauty hidden in it because I just keep wondering like what was the person who was filming this thinking, because it probably had like one of those really like freaking you know weird like 2009 phones that film things in like a little square, you know. I don't know, man. I just like a weird flashback to life.
Can I also
like how I used to be in 2009. Anyway, saying?
A weird flashback as well, just before we continue. This is very important information to share with you. This is set 9 years after the events of K9 Regeneration. Continue.
What the fuck are you talking about?
K9 takes place in 2050, and this takes place in 2059.
Shut the fuck up. Don't you dare come into my house and tell me these things about K9. God damn it. Anyway, what was I going to say? David, you distracted me. I lost my... All right. So what I was going to say is I had never seen this episode before. And years of knowing people and people telling me you should watch Waters of Mars did not make me watch the episode. Now I have finally seen the episode, and it's great. It's really, really good. I'm not gonna like surprise anyone with like a I actually hated it. Here's the one thing I will say against it, though. I think this episode suffers from a problem that I don't have a name for, but it's something I feel I've seen a lot happen a lot, which is not really a problem with the episode in itself. I think the episode in itself is fantastic. There's nothing wrong with the episode itself. The problem is where this episode stands in relation to the rest of the show. I feel like when people bring this episode up, it's like, oh man, if you're going to watch one episode of Doctor Who, this is the best. This is one of the best ones. And it's like, you're not wrong, but also, the reason why this episode really works is because it exists in contrast to 50-ish years of Doctor Who that came before it, you know? Like, the reason why those final 5 to 10 minutes are so just, like, unsettling is because you have seen Vandy variations of the Doctor being put into similar situations and then being forced to accept that sometimes they can't change time or figuring out a way to, like, save one or two people. But this is, like, when he comes back into the spaceship, there's this one moment where Adelaide looks up at him. Adelaide, is that how to say her name?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she looks up at him, and he looks down, and he smiles, and you're like, oh, no, 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 no. Like, fuck, go back, go back. Mm-hmm. And even Adelaide, like, realizes it, because she immediately, like, shakes her head no. Like, no, this is actually, this is bad. And I feel like that only works if you know what the show usually is like. To me, this episode is like the paintball episode of Community. It's a fantastic episode, and I don't blame anyone if they put this in on atop their top 10. But I feel like the reason it works is because you have to like know what the show usually is like, because it's kind of a break from tradition. But that's just kind of like a meta thing. That's a personal thing. I always think about this a lot. Like, you know, I feel like that's one of the magics of television, because television is one of the few mediums where, by the nature of how it works, you can kind of respond. A show can respond to itself, or a show can like exist in contradiction to itself. So, yeah, that's what I'm like. Yeah, that's why I'm like, I love this. Really good. Really, really good. But I'm like, a part of me is like uncertain about saying that it's like the best episode of 10th Doctor's run.
What I like about that on that note is that it's kind of like the toxic manifestation of his whole like ethos. Because, like, you think about, like, you know, never cruel or cowardly, never give up, never give in, you know, the whole thing. This is, like, that stretch to, like, its most destructive and toxic, like, level. Because, like, he has a split second, like, okay, I'm not going to give in. I'm going back. But, like, in doing so, like, he clearly, like, just destroys everything. Like, you get, like, that sense of, like, the thing that really struck me, is the parallel, and it gets referenced a lot, the parallel to Fires of Pompeii, like various ways. One, like, he literally references, you know.
Yeah, Pompeii.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, imagine you found yourself somewhere, I don't know, Pompeii.
Imagine you were in Pompeii.
What the hell's that got to do with it?
And you tried to save them.
But in doing so, you make it happen.
Anything I do just makes it happen.
Like, you can see him breaking through the entire episode, him being like, you know, I can't keep doing this. I can't keep, you know, showing up in places and having to, like, you know, step back because, you know, I can't interfere. And you get that kind of, I don't know if it was intentional, but, like, the bit where he comes back in after the explosion is, you know, he's, like, bathed in this light. You know, you see him, like walk in, it's like a mirror of the bit in Fires of Pompeii where he opens the door, like he comes back in the TARDIS and he opens the door.
It is actually.
Yeah, and like, you know, he reaches out, he says, come with me. It's like a nice little call, but I think it's like, you know, it's him taking the wrong lessons from that, I think. And like, you even get that moment. I'm zooming about the place. I'm like Gadget. I'm zooming around the place. I'm gonna get the gadgets. I've I know about Gadget. It's like, it's you know, there's that moment where, like, a lot of people like rag on the Dalek flashback because everyone's like, oh, just because, you know, they have to have a Dalek scene in every single episode because Terry Nation, blah, 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 blah. Even though Stephen Moffat was like, that would be the stupidest deal in the history of television. It existed, like, it doesn't exist. There's no Dalek deal, you know. But like, even if like a Dalek, it's like being like, you know, I can't kill you because even though I know you're too important to, like,
yeah,
kill, and he still goes and like stops. He still goes and like does that. It's like
about that scene. There's two things I love about that scene. One, I will make it after this recording. Mm-hmm. I want a GIF of the Dalek silently flying away, which is just such a funny image. But also, I love that scene because you have this moment that's terrifying, and then after she goes like, "I had to go after him," and then the doctor's like, "For revenge," and then she's like, "No, why would I do that?" And you're like, "Oh shit!" From that moment, that was the moment I went like, "Shit, she's gonna die, isn't she?" And I actually like, that's such a, it's such a smart decision to wait until like after that moment. Not even that moment, like two scenes after that is when he finally reveals they all die. I mean, you know they're all gonna die, right?
Mm. Yeah,
but it's not until that moment that you clock the whole like, oh, she needs to die so that people can like be inspired by her actions. Is it this episode? I'm sorry. I watched Dreamland right after this, so it kind of superseded a bit of my recent memory. Is this the episode where it's like, I'm not a ghost. You're talking to me. I exist right now. Like, stop talking to me like I'm a ghost.
I think so. The bit that got me is that it's when he's talking to her about, like, you know, you. Like, you have a legacy to continue. The way, like, he like frames like her horrible death and their horrible death is like something beautiful to, like, you know, where he's like, this is your consolation for dying. Like, the world continues, and like, you can tell that, like, even then, like, you can tell that both he is, you know, he's so upset by having to say that, but also he's got like a weird kind of glint in his eye. It's a really, I think, great moment. I think this is his best performance, Tennant, as Doctor Who. There's so many moments that, like, really, like, the fact that, like, he can leave at any, and this is like scripting as well, the fact that he can leave at any moment, but, like, he continues making excuses to, like, stay, is just, like, he, like, the, I think, like, I don't know, it's just a great like characterization, I think. I don't know. I just love that, like, there's so much of this that, like, you know, this is him at his lowest, but he doesn't realize it until, you know, someone dies because of him, that he realizes, okay, I've actually, you know, I've gone way too far.
Right.
It's just,
and it's such a culmination. I really get, watching this episode, I really get how Moffat then on Day of the Doctor said, you know what, let's just bring back the Time Lords, because this is like the last drop you can squeeze out of he is the last of the Time Lords, because this is the logical culmination of that idea, where it's like, okay, you're the last one, and you've been sad, and you've been mourning, and you've been grieving it, and you've been using it as like a name tag thing. Ha, hello, I'm the last of the Time Lords. And this is the natural conclusion, which is when you go, oh my God, I'm the last one. There's no one else here to like tell me not to do stuff anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So fuck you, I'm gonna do whatever I want. And that's the thing. That's the moment where I feel like that's the moment when when Moffat went, we are bringing back the Time Lords, because it's like we've taken everything we can take from this concept of the Doctor being the last one.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I feel like if I had to watch Waters or Mars, I would have been much more okay with that happening in Day of the Doctor than I was when that actually happened. I remember when I watched Day of the Doctor, I was like, oh, it's kind of weird that they bring him back. But now I'm like, you know what? Yeah, fine. Let's go. Let's do it.
It's interesting as well. The next episode. It's interesting. The next episode is also
the Time Lords are back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I love Gadget.
Mm-hmm.
Why did Gadget not be Gadget? I love a robot that says has a catchphrase. Why did Gadget not become the 11th Doctor's best friend? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because as I read it up, the prop kept breaking every time. Which is like, of course. Of course it kept breaking every time. You can't have anything in Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. I like how when Gadget goes like really fast, Roman starts like freaking out as well.
Yeah, I love that moment. I love that it comes back. But my favorite scene has to be when he's walking away and just hearing all these characters one by one being dying.
Mm-hmm.
I love that so much because it's such a good scene. Mm-hmm. It's so well done and so well developed and genuinely like heartbreaking, all things considered. Like, it's just, these are the characters and you've spent enough time with them to be like, okay, like I get their vibes. And then to just watch all of them one by one, like, get consumed. And of course, the saddest infection moment is when what's her name?
Steffi.
Fucking, yeah, when she's in the room and it's the last thing she does is see her child's message. Mm-hmm. And you don't hear what it says, but you can pick up some words in German, like Mutter, and then you just see it from behind. I feel like really well directed, honestly. Mm-hmm. Great job, Graham. Mm-hmm. Great job.
Yeah. I was going to say the other Steffi scene I think about a lot is when they're on the roof, and she's like freaking out saying they're on the roof, and it pulls focus like the Doctor behind her like mouthing along like they're on the roof with her, and you can see like he's in like so much pain as well, but like he can't like step in to like you know do anything about that. He has to sit there and watch, like he stands there and he watches them all like freak out and die, and then he has that scene of him walking away and then, you know, realizing, okay, I can go back because there's no one stopping me from going back and, you know, doing all this.
Mm-hmm. I'm generally like, is this the best Space Under Siege story of the revival?
Mm-hmm,
I can't think of another one that's like as good as this.
Mm-hmm, I think it is.
And I love Base Under Siege stories.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whenever I see a Doctor Who episode and it opens on, like, a gray corridor and there's people with uniforms, I'm like, here we fucking go. I love Base Under Siege. But this is probably the best one. Maybe it's because they have more time to develop the characters.
Mm-hmm.
But also because, like, every death, quote-unquote death, feels meaningful. You know, everyone's got like one little line that when they die, you just go like when the captain sacrifices himself, like see you later. That's such a good scene. Or when she silently starts the bomb and Gemma Chan and the other guy are like, what are you doing? Like just what? That's such a good scene.
And like the Romans one where he's like, one drop got on me. I'm completely fucked now because I got hit by one drop. I guess like even Andy Stone with his carrot, you know? Andy Stone chewing on the carrot. And of course, Dr. Mark Grantham, and his death. I don't know. Yeah. I know it's like basic storytelling, but it's so smart to like prioritize the crew members over the flood. Because you can easily see a version of this where, like, the flood is, like, you know, they keep cutting back the flood, and the flood's doing this and that.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, whereas here you get, like, so much time to, like, you know, you get a sense of, like, their, you know, their interpersonal lives and, like, their personalities and, like, their whole character. You know, it's
you actually forget about the
flood.
One of them. You forget about one of them. And so the one that gets infected and gets trapped in the medical room. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, so refreshing to see a story where they're like, quarantine. Mm-hmm. Immediate quarantine. And it's like, because, like, the only other time I remember seeing that is an Alien where they mention a quarantine, but they immediately break it. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of useless. But even then, I'm like, oh, pretty nice. They actually respected quarantine rules. But the reason I bring it up is because that one, you forget about her. And then when the guy who's the co-captain who's in the ship gets infected, she just shows up out of nowhere and infects him. You're like, fuck, I forgot about her. Right. Mm-hmm. There's like three of them. And so it's such a, like, a nice surprise.
Mm-hmm. And, like,
yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's just like, it's just so clever. And it's so, like, well-structured and, like, you know, you really get a sense of, you know, personality. And the performances as well are all, like, so great. Lindsay Duncan as Adelaide is just, like,
yeah,
herb. Just so good.
Let me ask you a question about her.
Yeah.
How far away do you think we are from Big Finish doing a box set where it's Time Lord Victorious and her?
I think very far away. I think David Tennant is probably done with Big Finish for now. They would have done it during
the event. No. You're just, this is a lie. You're lying to yourself. You know David Tennant is not done.
It's either that or Jacob Dubman's going to come back and be like, "Hello, I'm the Tenth Doctor." Doing his performance as 10 is pretty much just, you know, when 10's like, well, he does a kind of vocal.
The vocal fry.
Dubman's performance is like 100% vocal fry. I have no idea how he says vocal chorus left, because it's just completely vocal fry. I think if they're going to do that, they would have done that during Time Lord Victorious, which we should talk about the Time Lord Victorious event, because
This is the origin of that.
I read the first novel, which is actually, I'm going to be honest with you, the first novel is actually surprisingly pretty solid. The villains are, like, really interesting. The idea, like, the concept, I think, is really interesting. Brian the Ood is a hoot in the holler and delight. He's Brian the Ood. He actually is quite interesting. The Dalek, I've read that. The second novel I haven't read, but it's always on sale, so, you know, it's gotta be good. The Dalek TV show, which I think we should watch, because it's like half an hour long. It's
how much worse is it than K-9?
It's fine. Like, Dalek TV show is really just like the Daleks are trying to figure out, like, what's, like, there's, like, this thing targeting them. They want to figure out what it is, so they, like, it chased them around the universe while they're trying to, like, figure out, like, how can we destroy this thing. As far as I know, it only kind of leads into, like, some other. It's a very strange event. Bits and pieces happen. It's no Doomsday. Doom comma S. Sorry, Doom apostrophe S day. But it's fine. I think it's an interesting concept. I think it's an interesting little event. It's getting reduced in price, like the comics and the novels and stuff. So, and it's only two novels. You only need to read, like, the two novels, and, like, you kind of have the whole picture. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, speaking of novels, I have a literary corner. If you want me to delve into my literary corner of the,
yeah, go.
Yeah. So I read the Target novelization of this in like preparation for this. And
yes, tell me. I want to know.
Okay, So here are some different things, and here are some additions and subtraction stuff. Okay. So the first one is, it opens on, and this is a thing, I don't know how many Target ones you've read, but this is a thing they keep doing, where, like, it opens on the villains arriving. Like, the Witchfinders one has the one where, like, you know, the Morax get imprisoned. This one has the Flood arriving on Mars. And they arrive on, like, they're embedded in, like, asteroids that come from, like, a dead planet from, like, way, way far away. And they like, collide with Mars. And then they get, obviously, they're in Mars. The other thing, the next point, is as I... so you'll remember in
is this not gonna make me want to read the story, because I kind of want to read it.
I'll keep out the more spoilery aspects of it. Well, there's one I want to say to you, because there is one bit. Actually, no, I'll leave the deleted scene out, even though the deleted scene I think is really interesting. There's one bit I don't remember in Planet of the Dead where the whole he will knock four times stuff, which, by the way, Zombie Andy Stone has really good comic timing, because when he's like, he will knock.
That is such a good bit. That is generally, I don't hear any knocking. Knock, knock. I like to think that happened everywhere he went. Mm-hmm. Like he was waiting at a diner for some food, and then somebody like knocked on the counter three times, and he punched them in the face. No.
But. In this, the doctor has a theory that Ood Sigma sent her that prophecy to try and get him to show up in the Ood planet, which does explain, but like it makes his appearance at the end a bit more like, you know, he's really trying to get the doctor's attention right now. I won't delve into the Adelaide as a child stuff if you're going to read it. I will say there's a reference to Lady Gaga, which one really threw up my mind of like, oh, that's when that's set, obviously. And two, maybe think of Snapped, stream Snapped on your podcast app of choice. Do you want to know about the deleted scene thing that they added in here that kind of expands on a concept in this? Or do you want me to skip ahead from it? Because
go on, tell me.
So there's a chapter. There's an entire chapter of this. That is, I think, if I recall correctly, it's set after they go to the ice field, where Adelaide's like, I want to show you this. And she shows him this ancient totem covered in Martian language. And it turns out that Gemma Chan is actually a linguist, but they couldn't tell anyone that she was a linguist because it's like top secret. So they brought her along as like under the guise of she's, you know, whatever. But they want Gemma Chan to translate this text. And the doctor's like, I know Martian, I'll do it. And he reveals it's a warning from the last ice warriors on Mars, who are like, we froze this thing under the ice. We had to leave Mars because it is like killing us. There's no way to stop it. If you can read this, like, leave Mars right now, because we had to, like, we couldn't stop this. We had to leave. Like, we had to leave our home because it was going to kill us. And then he's like, well, you know, Adelaide, you kind of fucked up here, Adelaide. They also make Ed, the co-captain, Adelaide, much more of like, you know, will they, won't they? They could have been a couple kind of thing. And also they have like this, they have this whole thing at the end with like the survivors and stuff. There's also another thing where like, they kind of make a change I think is kind of interesting, because, you know, in the episode, when like the ice starts breaking, you know, and like,
yeah,
so in a novel that clarifies that they're trying to like mess with the atmospheric pressure in the base to basically like spread the water all over the place, like all over the base, so they have like, you know, they can just, you don't have to like, you know, pursue whatever, they can just back. And in the episode that they all scream, but in like the book, Steffi, like, her zombie knows how to like change the controls, so she goes over and she starts like typing like all these controls to like change the pressure and do all that stuff. Yeah, but other than that, oh, the other thing as well is I think this change is kind of silly. So in the episode when he like meets all of them, you know, we get like the flashes of the BBC News website where like, you know, Andy Stone died 2059. In the book, instead of it being like, you know, because obviously you can't like novelize, you know, the doctor remembered seeing a flash of the BBC News.
Yeah.
In the book, a past incarnation was in New York City and found a newspaper that had a page about an article about Mars colonists die in mysterious fashion. And Doc's like, I remember reading that newspaper and it said that you died. And that's how they address him knowing they're all gonna die. Is that he read the newspaper? It doesn't say which incarnation. In my head, I saw Hartnell, so maybe William Hartnell was like, yes, Mars explosion. yes,
it's like I'll make sure to remember this, but not to get another flu link.
The flu link. Maybe it's full of the flood. It's a really good novelization.
Sorry, this just gave me a thought. Sorry, just you mentioning Hartnell right now. Which is the what's the doctor that's been in less multi-doctor stories? I think it's Seven, right?
Well, technically speaking,
let's not count Big Finish in books.
If we count everything before us, because I know, if you don't count comics or books,
it's Seven.
Is it Seven? Yeah, because Seven had no Seven's never. The only time Seven has been in the story with other doctors is Dimensions in Time and Power of the Doctor.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it is Seven.
Eight, it's not Eight because Eight gets one more. Technically, Night of the Doctor is a multi-doctor because at the end, the War Doctor shows up.
I mean, if you say that, then TV movie counts for Seven as well.
Okay, because, you're right. Good point. So maybe it's tied between Seven and Eight. Anyway, sorry. Let's go back to Waters of Mars. I'm going to read this book. It sounds interesting.
It's really good. It's a really good read. It's a really quick read. It really does. It's that sweet spot of, it's going to change some stuff. It's going to clarify some stuff. It's going to keep some stuff the same. It's good. It's great. It's no Gadget, but what is?
Gadget,
Andy Stone. I don't know. I really do love that. And we spoke about it briefly on our Pompeii thing, but AAO. The way they treat fixed points in time and how it becomes such a thing of he clearly cares, but he doesn't care enough to be I'm actually gonna stick by my whole thing because it clashes with my whole, moral code. And again, the fact that he's using Pompeii as both a warning and an excuse.
Yeah.
When in Pompeii he was only saving one family, whereas here he's trying to quench a volcano before it erupts.
Yeah.
It's such it's such a great use of it's such a great way of it ties into you saying it plays better if you have an idea of this is what this character usually is like. This is such a great deviation. It plays so well them using that kind of you as a viewer can see the gears turning in his head as he's going through this. It's such a great way of bringing us into the whole character and what he's doing. It's such a great kind of really great kind of way. I don't know.
I liked it. Didn't know how to wrap it up. This episode is now officially 5 minutes longer than our Dreamline episode. So
we've been getting back to good lengths. I think after the whole 20-minute.
This is like a bomb. This is when the Doctor Who theme opened. I was like, we're back after so many after K-9 and Sarah Jane and all that shit. It felt like being welcomed back.
Well, the good news for you is that what we have left is, let's say first next time.
Who are they? Stand back, Miss Smith. Compressing. progression halted.
Now release the child. By order of the High Council of Raxus Prime, you are charged with crimes against the state. Fraud, theft, high treason. The penalty for each is death.
It's a new one. He made me do it.
Please, no, I'm innocent!
What we have left is we have the gift, which is our Sarah Jane finale. And the wrap up. Then after that we'll have Dreamland, and then we have the end of time, and that's us for 2023. So
we're so close to saying, when did we start Tenant?
We started Tenant like two years ago, I think.
Fuck. If we are gonna spend four years on Matt Smith, aren't we?
Well, no, what might be quote unquote blessed relief to you is that once we finish K9, we have one
no spin-offs for a while.
Yeah, because we have like the only spin-offs we're gonna have is like we're gonna have Miracle Day, and then that's Torchwood done. After Miracle Day, we have the one full season of Sarah Jane, and then that one 3-episode season, and then we're done Sarah Jane. And after that, it's just Class, and like, you know, if we do Redacted or Daleks, or if we do Nolly, because Nolly technically is now set in the same universe. After that, it's just Matt Smith and Capaldi and Jodie and David Tennant and Judy Gatwa.
And David Tennant again. He's back for the fourth time.
He's playing.
I'm just saying, like, he comes back. Shuji regeneration. I mean, they should not do this, but it'd be really funny if, like, the doctor Shuji's regenerating. Oh, so here we go, and then it's Dave Tennant again. It goes no, and immediately just wastes our regeneration. Like, not again.
Oh,
I love the idea that he just keeps coming back.
Yeah. He can't.
The other doctors are like, for the love of God. Leave. He's like, oh, I'm back.
We should
By the way, sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna pitch to you that we should cover Tales of the TARDIS as well.
We should. That sounds good.
It'll be like 2035.
Yeah, it'll take so fucking long, but we'll do it. I'm telling you, so before we wrap this up, the AV Club just put out a top 15 David Tennant's best Doctor Who moment list.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to guess what episode is not in here?
Wars of Mars.
Exactly. But you want to guess which episode is in here? Voyage of the Damned.
Ugh. What number is
that? Ed, Tooth, and Claw. They're 15 and 14. The number one moment is... The Doctor Doesn't Want to Go, End of Time Part 2.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. What tooth and claw moment is...
The Doctor pretends to be Scottish.
Zombie AV Club. I bet you that was written by ChatGPT as well. I don't know.
Was this made by ChatGPT? Let's see. No, it was made by a person.
Oh, what was her name? John AI.
Their name was. His name is Chateau Gale Petra Town.
We'll go out on the original Waters of Mars. March. Okay, I knew it was going to... No, before this, I was like, I'm going to mess up. I'm going to say Wars of March instead of Wars of Mars, and I did the wrong thing. I'm going to go and listen to Bayless Manger versus the War Master.
Nice.
I'm looking forward to hearing Derek Jacobi say Bayless Manger, and then Bayless Manger say...
Whoa! David, we just skipped the most important part of this episode. What? Lindsay Duncan was the voice of TC-14?
I said TC-14 at the start, thank you very much.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear it.
I could have said...
I was too busy looking at...
I could have said the her other big role, which we all remember as the insane critic character in Birdman, the film Birdman, starring Birdman.
I don't remember much about Birdman, I'm sorry.
She has that one scene in Birdman where it is, like, is a movie I don't particularly care for or dislike, but there's a scene in Birdman where she's like talking to Michael Keaton and she's like, I can destroy you because I'm a critic. And I'm a critic, so my job is to destroy all art. And Mike Ian's like, yes, that's correct. And he walks away. And then Edward Norton's like, you know, you critics, you destroy art. She's like, yes, I do. That's my job. I'm a critic. And Edward Norton's like, and he walks away. And it's very embarrassing.
The one thing I remember about that movie is, the two things I remember about that movie, the number one is him naked. Walking outside. I remember that. The other thing is that scene where I think it's Edward Norton goes into this whole speech about how he was abused as a child, and then it turns out he's just like making that shit up. He's like, I've told you I'm a good actor. I remember being like, what the fuck? That was really funny, actually.
It's a strange movie. But yeah. A stick of stone, Mothic. Bye.
Bye.
É pau, é pedra, é o fim do caminho. É o resto de toco, é um pouco sozinho. É um caco de vidro, é a vida, é o sol. É a noite, é a morte, é o laço, é o anzol. É peroba do campo,
é o nó da madeira.
Canga, candê,
é uma tita pereira.
É madeira de vento,
da ribanceira.
É um mistério profundo.
Chovendo é conversa ribeira das águas de março. É o fim da canseira.
É o pé, é o chão.
É a mastradeira.
Passarinho na mão.
Pedra de atiradeira.
É uma ave no céu.
É uma ave no chão.
É um regato, é uma fonte.
É um pedaço de pão.
É o fundo do poço. É o fim do caminho. No rosto, desgosto. É um pouco sozinho. É um estrepe.
É um prego.
É uma ponta.
É um ponto.
É um pingo. É uma cor,
é um conto.
É um peixe, é um gesto.
É uma prata brilhando.
É a luz da manhã.
É o tijolo chegando.
É a lenha, é o dia. É o fim da picada. É a garrafa de cana. Estilhaço na estrada.
É o projeto da casa. É o corpo.